Well, hello, my friends and fellow cosmic sojourners. This is Kelsey, co-host of our Big Fat Journey Across the Universe. Before our official episode launch, it feels fundamentally necessary for me to address you directly about something very important. No intro music, no frills, just you and I sitting together to have a quick chat about the elephant in the room, so to speak, regarding astrology. So you might be thinking, why astrology? Why, oh why, would anyone want to explore this bullshit psychobabble, this relentlessly popular pseudoscience, this vestigial holdout of magical thinking that, more often than not, is relegated to a punchline? The butt of a joke told by people who think themselves too smart and self-assured to be so gullible to believe in astrology. You know the type of people I mean. The career skeptics with their eyes permanently stuck mid-eye roll. And you know what? I don't blame them. And I'm not sure anyone should, because being a skeptic is a healthy position to take when you begin any journey toward learning the mystical arts. But here's the thing. What you shouldn't allow your skepticism to do is to suffocate your curiosity. Skepticism is easy, but it doesn't write a good movie. But with curiosity in the driver's seat, there's no telling where your story will take you. I, too, am a skeptic, a curious skeptic. And after all this time and energy, I have yet to prove astrology false. It's just the opposite, in fact. I have enthusiastically, if not also begrudgingly, proven to myself over and over that not only is astrology real, it is increasingly worthy of devoting myself to the process of its deeper and deeper levels of discovery. However, there are a lot of dangers and pitfalls to not approaching the study of mystical arts with a skeptical eye. One of the most dangerous consequences is that astrology is sometimes the slippery slope to what I often call cult brain. When venturing into mystical territory, you may find yourself trapped in an echo chamber of people who have completely lost touch with their own discernment. The danger of fully buying into something without first evaluating your motivations and internal biases is that you may find yourself clinging to anything and everything that gives you something to believe in. Astrology is not a place to escape to. In fact, it's going to plant you directly in front of a mirror and turn the lights all the way up. This is not Cosmo Magazine. We are not here to read you a vague horoscope printed on the back of a newspaper. The bubblegum Lululemon popularization that modern astrology began to undergo in the 90s has cemented itself into the mainstream so pervasively that it's no wonder so many people take pride in not believing in that astrology stuff. But it is so, so much more than any of that. So if, like myself, you are also a curious skeptic, I hope that by the time we finish our little chat, you will feel inspired to follow along with this podcast series and give yourself the opportunity to learn something powerfully ancient and potentially life-altering. I'm sure all of us have found ourselves in spaces online or among friends or at parties where people sigh and walk away or excuse themselves with a, well, that's my cue to leave, when someone starts asking people what sign they are or what's your big three. And I think those dismissive and uncomfortable responses come from a deeper place than the naysayers will admit. Their most common argument is either, humans are an evolutionary fluke. We're born, we live, we die, and that's it. Or maybe even, astrology is nonsense. No rational person believes that floating bits of cosmic detritus have any bearing whatsoever on someone's personality. We're not special, get over it. But what they're actually responding to is the pop culture, iced coffee and hot yoga, Becky the dreadlocked starseed trope they associate with anything new age sounding. And yes, I too love iced coffee and yoga, but I digress. I believe that what they're actually reacting to is the idea that something as intangible and abstract and prescriptive even could possibly have some sort of bearing on their life, because it means a loss of control, an ego death, I suppose you could call it. And I get it. Ever since the first scientific breakthroughs killed the long and often brutal history of magical thinking, we've come a very long way as a species. We've advanced technologically, industrially, medically, that it's no wonder they worship the god of science. Unlike the others, he slaps you in the face with the reality of his existence, his measurable, provable, predictable reality. And he answers all of their questions. From germ theory to artificial intelligence, the scientific approach will figure it out. The catch is that the only type of questions science deems relevant begin with the word how. How do we harness power from the sun? How do electrical impulses racing through a maze of neural pathways in our head create a sentient self-aware being? And they are so committed to this monotheistic cult of how that they might as well call it a religion. They worship at only one altar and everything else is heresy. They don't call it that, of course. They call it foolishness or wishful thinking. And, you know, to be fair, they've got it on good authority that human beings are meaning-making machines. We're always finding faces in the clouds and trusting that magic eight balls tell us whether or not our crush likes us. Being so absolutely certain that the rainbow we saw when our grandfather died was him saying goodbye. So yes, we do seek meaning, and we'll find it any way we can, because we, like them, seek answers. And for people like us, we understand that to ask how does this or that happen is not the only question worth asking. There is another equally valid line of inquiry that so many people reject. That line of inquiry begins with the word why. Why does this or that happen? And what if coincidences aren't random? And why is a pattern only valid when it's measuring something concrete and tangible? Because remember, not long ago, psychology was rejected as nonsense as well. Truth is not truth only when you can touch it. To ask how does this or that happen is a worthy question, but it is not a monolith. It gives only half the answers to this human experience. So, when science says something is happening, what is it that's happening? How does it operate? And what does that mean for us? It asks that so that it can collect a data set from a physical experiment and use that knowledge to build a greater understanding of the material world. It seeks to discern the implications that discovery has on the world around us. For example, when science asks, how do we fall in love? It would say, through a series of chemical and biological reactions that take place, affecting us on an instinctual level to fortify the strength and safety of the community and ensure procreation occurs so the species survives. What spirit asks is, why did you fall in love? An answer like that is entirely abstract and uniquely subjective. Why do I love him? Well, I fell in love because his kisses feel like poetry. Or because when I look in her eyes, I understand the beauty of sacrifice. Or perhaps because the way that person breathes reminds you of the warmth and wisdom of your great-grandmother who reminded you how special she thought you were. There is no how for a question like that. Can you even imagine that? Some brilliant mind in a long white coat asking, okay, right, but how does a kiss feel like poetry? I mean, you'd respond, I don't know, it just does. Okay, then prove it then, they'd say. But you can't. The proof is in the experience. So here's where I really begin getting to the point. All of those examples I just gave of how and why are a representation of the concept of non-overlapping magisteria, which was a term coined by archaeologist Stephen Jay Gould, who was driven to this inspiring realization after listening to an address made by Pope John Paul II to the Pontifical Academy of Sciences in 1996. This speech was entitled, Truth Cannot Contradict Truth. In this bold, life-affirming speech, Pope John Paul elaborated on the idea first set forth by Pope Pius X, that to suggest science and spirit cannot coexist is to fundamentally misunderstand them both. They live in entirely different magisteria. That is to say, they exist in parallel realms of truth. The one cannot disprove the other because they ask entirely different questions with their own freestanding answers. Science seeks answers through indisputable and revolutionary discoveries about this material universe. But that does not contradict or disprove the simultaneous quest for spiritual truth. Science and spirit do not conflict. They're sisters, traveling two different paths up the same mountain called universal truth. At this point, you may be asking yourself, Okay, so how does this relate to the case for astrology? Well, in the same way science answers how love happens and spirit answers why love blossoms, astronomy asks and answers as to the composition, behavior, and movement of celestial objects, while astrology asks and answers as to the enigmatic and unfathomable influence the nature and movement of those very same spheres have on an individual human soul. But the hardline skeptics who worship only their god of science would still likely respond that they don't. They have no influence over a human life, and how could they? They're literally just floating balls of gas, metal, and rock, millions of light years from this tiny, unremarkable, pale blue dot we call home. And once again, those stoic naysayers would be drawing their conclusions under a false premise, because matters of spirit do not concern themselves with the nature of material processes. By its very nature, the language of spirit is inviolably immaterial. Its presence is as real and intangible as the poetry of a kiss. Astrology developed carefully over centuries, using the same tools as astronomy, biology, or any other material science, through the methodology of observation, experimentation, pattern recognition, and direct experience. Is the tireless intellectual pursuit to illuminate an understanding of our shared human experience only valid if it travels on the path of your preferred perspective? If so, there really isn't anything that makes science so different than religion. All of this to say that if, like me, your curiosity outweighs your skepticism, we would love to have you join us in July. Embark on the journey, enjoy the pursuit, and don't take anyone at their word, not even me. Strive, seek, study, discern, and dabble. Allow yourself the opportunity to ask, what if? What if astrology is real? What if it's been true this whole time? Because remember, when it comes to things like astrology, credibility does not wear a lab coat or carry a clipboard. With astrology, the proof is in the experience. The proof is in the poetry of a kiss. And if you've made it all the way to the end of this diatribe, I really hope you'll join Jamie and I in July as we make our journey across the universe. Until then, see you later.